ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode explores, expands, and evolves the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity, joy, and exponential growth. And now, here is your host, Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case. I am the host of the show, and I'm excited that you're here. Thank you for being here and being a part of the show. If you'd like to interact with us while we are live, you can head over to the Adventures in Truth Facebook page. And in the live window, you can type into the comments, and those comments will come through to us live, and we'll be able to respond to you on the air. If you're here with us, we'd appreciate you liking and subscribing. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on Facebook, hit the like and subscribe button. Share this with your friends. Let them know what it's about. This is going to be a really great conversation today, a very powerful conversation. I'm really excited to welcome back to the show Paul Diamond. And we're going to talk about the visions of ayahuasca integrating your experience. So it's going to be a good conversation. Paul is an ayahuascaero living in outside of Cusco in Peru. He has a center there. We're going to talk to him a bit about that as well. And I'm really excited to dive into this conversation. It's going to be some good stuff. Talking about the visual aspect of the ayahuasca experience is quite profound, and there's a lot to it. And I think there's a lot of myths that can be dispelled and some clarity that we can bring to hopefully help those of you who have experienced it or who are experiencing it to have a better experience or at least a better understanding of the experience. And that's ultimately the goal here. And also to support Paul and his center in Tantraya in Pisac, and to let you all know that he's there and doing business. So we're going to get to talk about that more in just a little bit. In the meantime, give me just a second. We're going to do a couple quick commercials, and I will see you on the other side of the break. All right, we begin with the book. Fearsachoicebook.com is the page you can find my book. My book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's available on Kindle and IndieBound. And anywhere you buy good books. But Fear's Choice is a tremendous book that is about unraveling the illusion of our separation from love. And its focus and its intent is really clear. It's to change your relationship with fear. And that's what this book does, is it takes you through the evolution of fear in the human experience and in our own personal experience, how it's used, and giving you the tools and the ability to see it from a very different perspective. Because what I know is that when you change your relationship with fear, it changes everything. So www.fearsachoicebook.com, check it out. And I'm sure you will enjoy it. And there's also videos and testimonials and stuff about the book there as well. So check it out. Thanks, guys. All right, part two, My World is Good. This is, for me, the year of conscious creation. This is self-proclaimed. I will be straight up and admit it fully. But after observing all of the crazy shit that's gone on in our world in the last number of years, I wanted to shift a focus. I wanted us to come together in a way that we could affect the mass conscious in a conscious way. And so this sort of gender neutral or neutral positive statement, my world is good, is available to anyone. It doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. It doesn't matter your race. It doesn't matter your sex. It doesn't matter your religion. It doesn't matter your color. It doesn't matter what country you live in. It matters not. This is about 7.5 billion unique worlds inhabiting one planet. And I say that very specifically because the focus in your world is entirely yours. No one can live your life for you. No one can change your life for you. No one can decide your life for you but you. So incorporating this energy, my world is good, into your world will then begin to change your perception of the world as you experience it. Because remember, our perception is just the reflection of our beliefs and ideas and viewpoints coming back to us. So my world is good puts a whole powerful energy into the context of your world. And then as we each add that into our own experiences, we now have an energy that we can come together in. And I feel like that energy over time will build a momentum that will create a tipping point. And it will create that tipping point not only in the world, but in our individual worlds, because the more we dive into this, the stronger it becomes. And the more we begin to build the perception of our world being good, and we begin to see the world as good. So I feel very compelled to really do that. And I encourage you to join this movement, because the only thing that you need to join this movement is your energy, your focus, and your attention. And it doesn't need your email. It doesn't need your money. We just want your energy so that we can create a change in the consciousness that we have been experiencing into a more favorable aspect of what we want to be seeing. So my world is good. Check it out. And again, all it requires is your energy. So say it 10 times when you wake up in the morning, say it 10 times when you go to bed at night, and say it throughout the day whenever you think about it, just to reinforce on a continual basis, building the momentum of my world is good, and watch what happens in your world as you do. Pretty extraordinary. So we'll be right back one more time. When we come back, Paul's going to be joining us, and we're going to dive deep in this topic of visions. So we'll be right back. All right, we are back, and we are back. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hi, good. Jim. Yeah, good. Thank you.
My friend, good to see you. So Paul is joining us from Peru. We were chatting a little bit before the show, and things are a little crazier there than they are here, and things are still trying to come together there. So Paul, for those of you who don't know and have not experienced Paul on the show before, Paul was the shaman that I worked with when I went to Peru 3 years ago now, had an extraordinary experience and have maintained a relationship with Paul over these years, and really want to support his center and his work as we begin to come out of this, as it were. Let's see how that goes. But Paul has all kinds of things layered into his program at Tantraya, and we're going to get into that more in just a little bit. But Paul, welcome to the show again. I'm excited to talk about this. I've been sort of, you know, as I'm on Facebook and I'm in on the boards and stuff, I see a lot of talk about people focusing in on the visions and getting crazy about their visions and turning it into a whole thing that I feel like diminishes the experience in some ways, because they become hyper focused in something that is only a minor part of the show, as it were. At least to me. And so that's why I really wanted to have this conversation with you, because you're living and breathing it 24/7. So get us started here with your thoughts about the visions themselves. We're going to get into more minutia about, you know, what they're about and how you can relate to them, but just as an overarching thought process.
Yeah, of course. It's a very fascinating subject that has multiple depths of inquiry that we can approach it at. We can say at some levels that this is just plant chemistry interacting with neurology, creating a kind of an inner experience of some kind. Then we can say that the deeper aspects of the visionary experience kind of tap us into the universal subconscious, as sort of hypothesized by Carl Jung, you know, where you come up against mythological or hero type beings in those inner planes, and that they have a kind of a personal reference or a personal symbology for you in some way or another. And then I think that there is a more abstract and more pertinent aspect of the visionary component that really needs to be brought forth if we're going to understand what the nature of not only ayahuasca and ayahuasca visions are, but also actually really ultimately the whole of reality and where that is being generated from. Because this visionary component is something very subtle. You know, the visionary component is happening all of the time, in fact. We notice it at particular junctures. We notice it, of course, when we are asleep, although not always while we're in it. But once we wake up, we recognize that there has been this reality generative function that has somehow taken place that we weren't in control of, but somehow managed to produce an entire reality. And likewise, of course, on the medicines, also we enter into all of these different fields of phenomenon, all of these different levels and dimensions of being. But we do really need to ask ourselves, you know, where is this being generated from? Who is experiencing it? And what is that reality generative function that seems to be taking place actually at every level, whether it be our normal consciousness or dream consciousness or medicine consciousness or whatever it may be? There's something very, very deep to inquire into and to analyze here.
Love it. Well, that's a perfect way to get us launched, because I have about 7,000 questions to come back on the other side. Maybe not 7,000, but I have a few questions. you alluded to it, and I want to dive into the difference between the vision state and the dream state. Talk a little bit about that if they're similar, but we'll get into all that on the other side. I'm going to take a quick break. Like I like to do every show is to start the show with a little meditation to kind of get everybody in on the same energy frequency that we are on here so that we can answer questions that are pertinent to everybody that's participating. I didn't ask you this in advance, and I'll ask you now. Would you like to do the meditation, or would you like me to go ahead and carry it out?
You go ahead, Jim. That's fine.
Good. Yeah, because I didn't give you a warning. So, all right, guys. Paul, I'll see you in just a second. We'll be back in just a sec. All right, you all. Here we go. Let's take a moment to focus. So this for me is a very important time because I like to start the show and get the juices flowing about what we're going to be diving into. And then to kind of harmonize our fields together, to bring, as they say, where two or more are gathered, so that all of you out there listening and watching can dial into the field that we are generating here and talking about the visions of ayahuasca. And hopefully that as we do this, your energy is filtering in and we're getting able to answer the questions that are pertinent to you. You can also ask those questions if you go to the Adventures in Facebook page, Adventures in Truth Facebook page. So I want us to take a moment. We're going to inhale through the nose and exhale from the mouth. Inhaling through the nose and exhaling from the mouth, getting fully present. And I want you to settle into where you are right now, wherever that is. Let your body begin to relax as you breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. And becoming conscious that as you breathe in, that you're breathing in life force, you're breathing in prana, you're breathing in chi. Breathe it in and feel it infiltrate every cell of your body. And then as you release the energy, as you release the breath, just purge all of the old energy and breath. Any resistance, any challenges, just let it go with the breath. And so I want you to continue that form of breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. And then let your eyes close as you focus and bring your awareness into your heart, into the center of your chest. And as you bring that awareness right into the center of your chest, I want you to become aware of your field. And your field is that expansive energy that emanates from you all the time. I want you to just become aware of it. It may come off as a sensation. You may see it. You may experience a little of both. Everyone has a different way of interpreting. So don't judge the interpretation. Just follow the cue here and just experience right now your field. And as you're experiencing, you're continuing to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. I want you to focus all of that awareness into the heart space. And I want you, as you're paying attention to your field, to become aware of the differences in the palate of your field, meaning we are attending to things all the time. Sometimes there are little things like the dog barking or a faucet dripping or an air conditioning thing. And other times there's a lot of heavier things that we store in our field. Maybe it's a frustrated relationship or a job or a spiritual challenge or any number of things that's not limited. I'm hungry. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things that can take up space in your field. But notice that things that are there have a certain dimensionality to them, meaning in your field is this incredible expansive energy. And then within that, there are these clumps of denser energy that are kind of absorbing and taking from your field. And the reason that's happening is that they're unresolved or they're things that are lingering in your field that you can attend to at a different point. But I want you to be aware of them, because the more that are there, the more of them will take the energy that you have to focus, will take the energy that you have, because they're consuming parts of your field. So what I want you to do now is I want you to command that field as best you can. Just command all the energy of your field into your heart. Bring it focused into the center of your chest, because I want you to have an experience of the inside of you. So focusing on that inside, focusing, feeling that warmth and that tingling sensation that happens as you focus all of that breath and awareness right into the heart. As you bring your field in, let it begin to explore the inside of you. Let it explore. Go around in the inside of your head, behind your eyeballs and your sinuses, and explore around your brain, that magnificent organ in your head. And let that consciousness roam around your brain all the way in the inside, maybe slip into the pituitary in there. Check it out. Come down to the base of the spine, or the base of the brain, into the brainstem, and then into the spine. And then I want you to be aware of this magnificent cord that runs from the top to the bottom, surrounded in fluid and bone, protected, but having all of these nerves that emanate from it. And just be aware of that magnificent, incredible thing that's going on in your body as you experience your own organs, as you feel through your body. How does it feel? What are you experiencing? If you find yourself feeling tad discomfort, focus your breath into that place and breathe life into it and let it expand and dissipate. Don't create another clump in your energy. Just expand it and let it dissipate. And as you do, let that travel down the arms and the legs, being very cognizant of the internal experience of you. This is significant because you carry you through your whole life. And building this relationship is going to change things for you because you begin to understand the flow of your energy. And now what we're going to do is we're going to focus in the breath. So now that you've traveled around, I want you to focus right back into the heart again, keeping that rhythm with the internal, with breathing into the nose and out from the mouth. And now we're going to count that breath. We're going to inhale to a count of four, filling completely, inhaling 2, 3, 4, and you're going to rest at the top. I want you to feel and experience that fullness and then relax into the fullness. And then consciously choose to surrender through the mouth. You're going to release to a count of 6, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Beautiful. Resting at the bottom, resting in that emptiness and in that void, feeling that ready and receptive. And now engage the lungs as you inhale. Filling completely, 2, 3, 4, feeling full, feeling powerful, feeling rich, feeling relaxed. And now consciously choosing to surrender it all in this moment as you purge from the mouth, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then resting in that void space, in that empty space. This is the space pre-creation. This is the space where you get to engage the emptiness and get into receptivity. And now you inhale and you bring it in. 2, 3, 4, feeling full, feeling awesome, relaxing into that fullness, and then choosing and purging as you release from the mouth. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I want you to continue that rhythm on your own, continuing to feel that amazing energy as you take in that life force, that prana, in through the nose, breathing it in, feeling it saturate every cell of your body, nourishing with that life force. And as you reach the top, surrendering, letting all of the systems of this magnificent body work in harmony and love, all because they are all connected and you are connected to all of them. And then purging and allowing that to go, allowing that to surrender this moment into the next moment, surrendering it completely as you void everything, let all of that air go, creating a space for something new. Continue that rhythm. And I want you to take in these words as you continue that rhythm. I am the evolution of God realized as matter. I inform and guide that expression as the pure expression of God. I show up as God. I connect as God. I align as God. I am creation realized. And from that, I create, expand, and engage. I am. And just feel that as the breath continues to move consciously through you, into you, and out of you. And now consciously allow your field to expand back out again. And notice it. Notice the power. Notice the energy. Notice the intensity. Notice the enormity of your field as it expands back out into the world. And bring yourself back present in this moment as we continue the conversation with Paul, and we dive in even further to this whole process of the visions of ayahuasca, which is a pretty cool conversation. And welcome back, everybody. All right. So let's talk about this idea. So in your understanding of this, is the dream state different than the vision state in ayahuasca? Let's start there.
I mean, like the dream, there are different levels and components of the dream. There are superficial aspects of the dream that have no meaning and we don't think about afterwards. There are components of the dream that can be very impactful upon us and that can leave a long and lasting impression. Now, the truth of the matter is they're still both a dream, but of course the quality, the quantitative aspect of it can make a difference. Mm-hmm. Another way of putting it, or another important question to ask, would be really, is our everyday experience any different from the vision of a dream or the vision of a medicine experience? Of course, the Buddha himself was very clear in saying there's no difference. You know, Buddha meaning awakened to what? Well, awakened to the notion that life is also of a dreamlike nature, being generated by a higher dimensional aspect of consciousness, which we can't identify necessarily, in the same way that even if we become lucid in the dream, even if we become aware that it is a dream, we still don't know where the dream is coming from. We still can't identify the dreamer and that aspect of consciousness that is generating reality. This is much more pertinent, you know, to really direct our questioning towards this. You know, what is vision in the first place? You know, it's a, you know, from a quantum perspective, of course, it's pulling through something that doesn't actually have any qualities of its own. And it's pulling them through into a three-dimensional reality where it has color and taste and sound and all of these other things. But in the quantum flux itself, it doesn't actually have any of those components. And light being an aspect, an essential aspect, of course, of vision, is an interesting one for us to begin to really kind of get our heads around. I mean, what is light but frequency, but vibration? Mm-hmm. And we can only really apply the same nouns that we have been given from birth to those particular vibrations. We don't know whether or not, of course, they apply across the board. We just take it for granted that your green is the same as my green, but maybe your green is my brown. We will never know beyond the confines of language in this manner. So visionary component at many levels needs to be questioned. There's also this idea, well, it's in fact, it's more than an idea, you know, it's scientifically shown that there is about 70% more light moving from the pineal gland, from the visual cortex at the back of the brain to the pineal, to the eyes, than there coming the other way, you know, 70% going into the eyeball and then to the pineal, then to the, you know, sensory apparatus at the back. In other words, something is being more generative than it is being receptive in the visual component of the brain in normal circumstances, never mind in an ayahuasca experience. Mm-hmm. Now, I suspect in an ayahuasca experience, in meditative experience, etc., what's really happening is it begins to kind of shut down those areas of the brain that are responsible for the distinction between what is very obviously an apparently objective, autonomous, extraneous universe, on what is very obviously self-generated. It kind of cuts through that line and makes it much less clear. And so our internal experience becomes much more three-dimensional and all around us and all-encompassing us inside of it. As much as it is a kind of an aspect of the brain or a kind of an inner visionary sort of component, as it were.
So if I'm understanding this, and I may be making my own words up here, but I'm curious if your thought is that if this is a dream, if this reality that we have is also part of the dream or vision aspect, is it that we just simply have more trained attention in this dimension and less trained attention in the dream or plant medicine vision? So it seems more erratic when really it's just a matter of where we're focused. So we're contrasting it to the thing we pay attention most to and the thing we pay attention least to and saying, well, this is weird, but is it?
Yeah. To a certain degree, but we do want to be a little bit careful about applying the term dream specifically to our reality. We don't want to be too dismissive of it on one hand, but we need to understand that it has a certain substratum or on another hand. So we don't dismiss it outright as being just an illusion and therefore not worthy of our attention. We do need to be very careful about this. We instead understand that its matrix, its substratum, its inner field is of no different nature than any other aspect or state of consciousness, because it partakes of the same quality of consciousness. It is consciousness. The dream gives us the easiest, obviously, understanding of that, because everything that we experience in the dream when we wake up, no matter how bizarre it was, we can very clearly be very clear, oh, this was just mind. Yeah, it may have been an alien, but it was just my mind. It may have been just a cup of tea, but it was just my mind. It may have been my neighbor, but it was just my mind. We can be kind of really clear about this. In the medicine, because of the chemistry, because of the neurology, because of the activation of certain hormonal secretions and stuff, it feels much more visceral and gives it much more weight in an experiential fashion. So we give it much more meaning. And that's not to be entirely dismissive of that. There may be some necessary import to that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we do need to understand that somewhere along the line, it's still just partaking of consciousness. What else is its nature? What's its substratum? You were the one that took the medicine. It didn't change anything outside of you. It changed mm-hmm. your consciousness, and it was your consciousness changing that allowed you to experience all of these different aspects and dimensions. You know, you're going inwards into the mind, into the substratum of consciousness.
Cool. Okay, so we're gonna take a quick break here, about halfway through. I'm gonna do a quick commercial, and then when we come back, Paul, you're gonna have a few minutes with the audience to talk about Tantraya and talk about the center and what the work that you're doing. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
Okay. And then we come back on the other side. I want to get into a little more about, what do we do with it? Do we integrate these visions? Do we try to understand them? Do we spend a lot of time interpreting them? What's typically the best approach to looking at the vision? But we'll talk about that on the other side. And we will be back in just a few. Okay, guys, we'll see you in a sec.
Science of Transformation Method, and I can't tell you the difference that it's made in my life.
This program is all about you coming into the greatest form of you. www.thescienceoftransformation.com. If you'd like to learn more about the science of transformation, the core and the essence of my brand and what I do here is about transforming fear. And the science of transformation is a process that helps to activate and stimulate the prefrontal cortex of the brain. It brings forward a greater expression of who you are, because it's going to change your relationship with fear, but it's going to change your relationship with a lot of the things that have kept you stuck in your world. So check it out. You can sign up for a free consultation with me to get started. There's a discount on introductory packages, but www.thescienceoftransformation.com. Join us there. And again, testimonials there, more information about the program, and love to talk to you about it. So hopefully we'll get to do that soon. All right, we're going to bring Paul back in, and Paul's going to chat with you guys about what he's got going on at the center down there. And I'm going to support him in that process. So here you go, Paul. It's all yours. Talk to the people.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Well, you know, Tantraya is a community of spiritual practitioners on one hand. It's a school, a mystery school specifically, on the other hand. And it is an ayahuasca retreat center on the other hand. However, in my own view, none of these things are separated from each other. So we are committed to a weekly regime of Taoist practices, of yogic practices, of internal martial art practices. We're committed to a weekly regime of ayahuasca and using ayahuasca as a tool of transformation in amongst these other tools of transformation. We don't give it too much credence just in and of itself. And we believe that with a combination of the Taoist arts, the yogic arts, the tantric arts, the shamanic arts, as well as a little bit of the Western scientific model thrown in, measuring brain waves, becoming aware of different frequencies the brain is giving off during certain entheogenic and non-entheogenic experiences, etc. Trying to get hold of all of this kind of technology, deep brain imaging kind of stuff, so that we can see what's kind of going on in some of these supernormal conditions of consciousness. And we're primarily concerned with the evolution of consciousness, and not just the evolution of consciousness, just a kind of a mental or intellectual level, the evolution of consciousness getting down to the cellular matrix of the body, getting down to the physical levels of the body, getting down to the neurology, the physiology of the brain, and making chemical, neurological, physiological, biological changes within the structure of the brain itself, opening and activating all of the subtle energy channels and waking up the dragon energies which are residing within the central channel, waking up the serpentine energies, the kundalini energies that are residing in the spinal channel. And these are really the most important energies that are concerned with evolution from a human perspective. You know, how can we become aware of our divinity? How can we become aware of our godlike essence? How can we make real contact with that, not just in an intellectual way, not just in a book learning way, but in an experiential, physiological, phenomenological way?
Fantastic. And you picked the biggest word for last.
Too difficult for me, for sure.
So let me throw up here. Where did it go? There it is. Let me show you. There's a logo for Tom Trya, the Coach for Transformation. www.tomtrya.com. Check that out. Paul does some amazing work in Peru, and I hope that if you're looking, and you're, can you turn down the volume a little on your side?
Me? Paul?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's echoing a lot. But anyway, I'm excited that Paul's here. You know, this has been a tremendous burdensome year on many people, and living in a place like Peru, it's a different world. And so if you're thinking about ceremony, if you're thinking about exploring this, I encourage you to be in touch with Paul. Go through tantari.com and check out what he has to offer, because it's a very well-rounded program. At least in my experience, I can say I felt that way. It's all about the whole you and not just parts of you. So I encourage you to check it out and to work with Paul.
Jim.
All right, my friend. Yes, my pleasure. So let's get back into this here. So my thought process is, I mean, because we can get super, super, super deep in this process about the visions. And my intention here was to sort of just bring clarity to the significance of them, and then how do we deal with them? Because I noticed that a lot of times people get very fixated in the vision and then lose some of the experience just because they're so focused in whatever it was they were looking at. Sort of like what we, and I know I keep comparing it to dreams, and I don't mean to make them at the same place, but just like, you know, you wake up from a bad dream and you can ruin your whole day trying to figure out why you had a bad dream.
And of course, the other side of it is that the dream is primarily, for the majority of human beings, a visual phenomenon. there are other aspects to it, but primarily visual. So it's definitely part of the same component. You know, we're given a lot, we give over a lot of brain power to the visual cortex. You know, an awful lot of brain power is given over to vision. But in all of the mystery schools, in all of the occult schools, actually it becomes important to train all of the internal senses. You want to be able to hear inner sounds. This is Shabd Yog or Nad Yog, the ability to hear inner sounds inside the body that can range from just gurgling and kind of bodily sensations all the way through to very extraterrestrial or kundalini type sounds, you know, bells chanting, all kinds of, you know, other normal phenomenon. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to get in touch with the sense of inner smell. The inner smell sense connects us very directly from the Muladhara chakra to the base chakra. So when we're able to activate that sense of inner smell, you know, by practice, basically, then actually get an effect on the inner body. All of the lower chakras are connected with the elements, and they're also connected with a particular inner psychic ability, ranging from vision to sound to smell to touch to taste. And really, we want to be able to get in touch with all of them. The truth of the matter is, however, of course, like our normal existence, we've become very, very fixated on the visionary component. Mm-hmm. We've got to teach ourselves, to move away from that as a habit, which we can train bit by bit. And as we do, we begin to find that actually very, very interesting kind of other normal phenomenon arise as we shift our attention away from what is being visually seen to being what is kinesthetically felt or heard or whatever it may be. Something else can open up there that's also very, very useful.
So is there in your perception of this, and it may be very individual, I don't know, but I thought to myself, okay, three ways that we go about this. We focus on integration, we focus on understanding, we focus on interpretation. Maybe there's another word that you would choose that would be a more beneficial approach to the visions within the context of ceremony.
It can be approached at various levels. It's not to say that there isn't value at this symbolic level, that there isn't value at this kind of Jungian kind of level of interpretation. It's not to give, to denigrate any of that. Like a dream, we can also gain value and import and meaning from that. I just feel that we can go to a deeper level with it that actually gives us, if we really grasp it, a sense of enormous freedom in every level of our reality. We're not taking any of it too seriously. We're not taking any of it as being objective or real. We're understanding, yes, it's of the nature of consciousness. Again, not to denigrate it. It's not to become a kind of reductionist view where it is mind only or brain only. The fact of the matter is brain or mind only is creating the entire universe, and not just universe, but universes within universes within universes, inception with inception, mm-hmm. with dreams, within DMT experiences, is creating all of this. This is extraordinary if we really consider it, hardly to denigrate.
Well, and it seems to me, and again, I don't mean this in a derogatory sense. It's just sort of the nature of the human being is if you're going to focus on the vision, if you're going to put your energy there, then you have to commit to a depth of travel within that context, meaning you can't just sit and kind of surface look at it and kind of not really go in. I mean, the whole thing is the going inside, is the going internal to the deepest parts of ourselves. So in order to maybe touch those smells or those feelings or those other things, do you think that it's just more about, if you're going to go there, then commit and go there in a very focused way, as opposed to looking at the pretty pictures and trying to decide what they mean?
To a certain degree, I would say that the ultimate thing is, don't get misled. Don't get misled by what you're perceiving and falling into the trap of believing that once again, it is a, you know, autonomous, extraneous, created reality. Because that's what we're doing at every single level. And it's what we're going to do once again when we die. And in that particular condition, that's the cause for future rebirth, is to keep getting caught up in these mind-based realities, which it doesn't matter how many bodies are generated along the line. You have bodies within a dream. Sometimes you have multiple bodies in a dream. It doesn't mean that those bodies are real. Right. When you wake up, you think that the body lying in bed is real. But when you die, you realize that wasn't a real body either. So we're always kind of jumping up to higher dimensional bodies where higher dimensional realities are being manifested ultimately. Now, the ayahuasca gives us a deep clue to this if we use our awareness and concentration to penetrate into that view. If we don't, otherwise we can stay at the superficial level of, you know, I saw a snake.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, the symbology is important, and typically I would think that if you're going to go there, it might be useful to have some support from someone who understands the symbology of the arena, you know. So if you have someone that you're working with, an ayahuascaro or a teacher who understands that dimension, that then can help flesh out for you what that may be attempting to reflect to you or show you or demonstrate or whatever the case may be.
Potentially yes, and potentially the possibility of getting completely sidetracked is also because you're going to just run after the minutiae of the dream. You know, yes, spend the whole time thinking about the dwarf if you want, but it's much more important to understand, what was the dwarf made of? Was it made of matter? No, clearly it was made of mind stuff, whatever that is. What is a dream made of? Is it made of atoms? What is a mystical or a medicine experience made of? Is it made of atoms? What is it?
Yeah, very interesting question, and a deep one as well. Interesting. So as we come around here on the topic, as we're rounding up, we got about rounding up the hour. I wanted to kind of take this to. So we talked about the vision, we talked about what they are and how to kind of engage with them or not engage with them. But ultimately, does it ultimately come down to the relationship that you build with the medicine? I was thinking in terms of, you know, before, during, and after ceremony. I remember when I signed up for coming down, when I came down to see you, that I felt the engagement happening already because I had decided. So there was something happening on an energetic level that I was aware of from the moment I committed to the process. And it began to unfold in my life in different ways, and things that were showing up and experiences that I was having. And then during the process, I carried that relationship that I had built into the ceremony And it seemed to take it to a whole other level for me. And then after the ceremony, still staying connected to the energy, but not so much connected to the fireworks, as it were.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Yeah, I mean, again, we don't want to get too caught up in the, you know, various levels of, you know, phenomenon that can arise on the medicine, because then we do miss the deeper value of it. We can get sidetracked very easily. We do get sidetracked very easily, you know.
We spend so much time beating phenomena out of the experience that we get obsessed with phenomena instead of just being in experience
all the time. We think that that's the kind of the game, and this is really in the Hindu tradition. You know, this is Maya. Maya is illusion, not in, again, in a derogatory kind of sense. Illusion in the sense you've misunderstood the nature of what you're perceiving as anything other than just energy plus consciousness. You've partaken it, or you believe it to be this, that, and the other, when in fact, actually, its nature is just energy plus consciousness all of the time. So run away from that notion, and in settling into that, then reality as we experience it can kind of open to us.
Yeah, I would have to say that that has absolutely been my experience, because there were times, particularly after ceremony, where I would get fixated on a particular concept or idea, and it would kind of begin to hyper focus in a way that wasn't serving, because it was making my perception too narrow. And so I've had to continually, I mean, 3 years later, I'm still running into these kind of hyper focused concepts that I have to surrender to something greater, because I'm trying to put them in a hole they don't belong in. And it seems like as I expand more and grow more, that becomes more and more the case.
Yeah, meditation is really the key to this, of course, because, you know, in meditation, we suddenly find ourselves, you know, really getting caught up in some little individualized aspect. And then we suddenly remember, I'm actually supposed to be settled and relaxed. And then you run away again, and then, relax again. So this is really, it's actually, you know, it teaches us. And it teaches us not just there, but it teaches us in the medicine ceremonies, et cetera, not to run away from where we are deliberately sending our intention, because chi follows intention, energy follows intention. So if your intention is all over the place, your energy is all over the place. You've got to focus it. You've got to direct it. You've got to know what you're doing with it, where you're sending it. And then energy can go there, and everything can kind of open up, you know, easily, as it were.
Yeah. So let's roll this back a second, because I think this is really important. So building a relationship with ayahuasca. So let's talk about the before experience, because I mean, there are things like diet you can adjust, and you know, getting off of meat products and things like that help to fine tune. And even that may not be as necessary now. I don't know, but to the degree that you are entering into a relationship with an energy that you are unfamiliar with, typically, how do you approach that so that you can create the greatest space for receptivity at the time of ceremony, so that you're not getting hyper-focused in phenomena, but getting wildly focused in just opening? My mantra for 4 months before I came to ceremony was surrender. I surrender. I surrender. I mean, I must have said it 500,000 times in 4 months in my meditations, in my processing. Every time I'd run into somewhere like that, I would say, "Oh, surrender it. Surrender it." And that seemed to help me. But I wanna see from your perspective, how do they enter into the relationship so that by the time they get to ceremony, they're prepared. The ground is fertile for what the medicine has to offer.
Well, you offer an interesting technique, Jim, and, you know, I would, you know, go with that. The honest truth of the matter is ultimately, you know, when you're faced with the utterly unknown and the divine and the force and power of that, there's not a lot you can do but either completely surrender or completely resist. Resisting usually leads to a lot of tension and issues. Surrender usually leads to bliss and ecstasy. So you tend to follow into the falling, you know, into the surrender side of the equation for the most part anyway. But really, you know, you're up against the numinous, you know, the quality of the numinous are awful, you know, A-W-E-F-U-W-L. It's full of awe and it's fucking terrifying. And we learn really bit by bit how to surrender the ego and how to surrender that which is holding us back from our divine nature. Because, you know, however close we think we are, there is work to be done and it is a work in progress. And, you know, it's bit by bit, little bit by bit, little bit of a chisel, little bit of a chisel. Sometimes one day we'll get there.
Yeah. So what would, as our closing, we've got about a minute left. I want to focus that even a little bit more. So I remember when we were first signed up and everything, it was all about set your intention. And I hear that and I see that, I'm sure you do too, across the boards a lot, people talking about their intention for what they went in for. Is there a particular, because I think, again, if you get too focused in the phenomena or too focused into what you think it is, you end up focusing in a way that doesn't serve because again, it becomes hyper-focused instead of expansion. So yeah. what would you suggest as a foundation for choosing your intention that helps set up this successful relationship before, during, and after?
Yeah, it's a good question, Jim. You know, you've got to be careful not to be so closed that you close off possibility as a result of it. You can't be so open-ended that you don't know where you're going or what you're right. gonna achieve or are you gonna even recognize it if it's so vague and open-ended. So really what you're looking for is something that is directed in a particular way but doesn't have a specificity to it. You don't know exactly what it looks like, but it moves it in a direction. For example, I intend to, you know, please bring me to the highest levels of evolution that I am able to get to at the present stage of my existence. So this is very directed, but you don't know what that looks like. It's right. completely open there at the other end. Maybe you want to ask, please open up all of my powers, shamanic abilities, psychic attributes, etc., that I'm ready for at the present stage of my development. Again, you don't know what it looks like. You don't know how it's going to do that, but it leaves it very, you know, really gives you a lot of opportunity, but doesn't close it down in any way. So yeah, you go brilliant. For these kinds of angles, you know, you want to leave it open-ended but directed. You know, perhaps you want to become more powerful as a healer. So you say, you know, please bring me to the highest levels of healing that I'm capable of bringing to myself and to others at this stage of my development. Because the thing is, it always changes. Is what you're ready for today isn't going to be the same thing that you're ready for tomorrow. You're going to be right. ready for more tomorrow, and then more and more and more and more. So you keep it very open-ended. You don't say, no, this is the end. You say, at the moment, what am I ready for? What can I receive? And then the next time you say, okay, now, today, what am I ready for? What can I receive? And you keep growing in this way.
Brilliant. Great. Excellent answer, and thank you for that. And I hope that all of you out there listening and watching take that to heart, because it is, you don't know what you don't know. And when you're entering into a dance with medicine that you've never experienced, you have no idea what you don't know. So give yourself the best opportunity to have the best experience by going focused, but go focused generally so that you're seeking that which is available to you right now. So you're not overwhelming the system. You're not, You're not trying to bite off more than you can chew, because the truth of the matter is, if you do that, the other side is not going to be a happy time for you. Because if you go through, you know, typically, because you're going to have to clear out all the crap that's in the way of you getting to where you want to go, and you're no longer in the medicine doing that. So, you know, but that's, you know, again, layman perspective, ayahuasca perspective. So it's always interesting, but we have run out of time. I want to one more time put up here, whoops, wrong one, for Paul, www.tantraya.com. Please check it out, reach out to Paul. If you're looking for ceremony, you're looking for a well-rounded, powerful, balanced experience, I'm telling you, check it out. Definitely worthwhile.
Paul, online, but a lot of material online if you can't make it to Peru specifically.
Yeah, you still have your Patreon up and everything?
Say again?
You still have your Patreon up and everything and all the courses and things?
Patreon is up and running. Patreon is where we do all of our Taoist and internal martial art practices. And then on Squarespace/Tantraya, that's where we're doing all of our Western magic. So we're doing astral projection, lucid dreaming, talisman magic, angelic magic, cabalistic magic. We've got all of that kind of thing going on. And, you know, yeah, we bring it all together in the end and see how we can evolve as fast as possible.
Right on. Paul, always great to see you. I so appreciate you taking the time. Paul's here from Peru, guys. Thank you very much for being here. Looking forward to hopefully getting to see you sometime in the next year. But if not, we'll get to see it this way. But that's my plan anyway. So I'll see you on the other side. We're going to close it out here real quick, and we'll be right back. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth Livecast. Please like, subscribe, and share. If you'd like to learn more about Jim's book, Fear is a Choice, Unraveling the Illusion of Our Separation from Love, check it out at www.fearisachoicebook.com. Also check out Moments of Truth, a new offering from Adventures in Truth. If you'd like to work with Jim, check out www.thescienceTransformation.com to book a session. Tune in live every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time and every Friday, 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Or look for our new releases and podcasts every Monday. Until next time, be well, and we'll see you again on Adventures in Truth Livecast.